Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. Don't expect us to be nice. Don't expect it to be safe. And don't expect us to be politically correct. Nothing is sacred. We find the queer, profane, and cringeworthy wherever we can, here on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
What is it about? There's something evolving.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. You are on Is Nothing Sacred. And tonight I'm in the studio with Patrick. Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Steph.
Have you recovered from your passion fruit related incident?
I never will.
Oh.
It's traumatic. Traumatic. Pavlovas will never be the same again.
Bloody.
Bloody Pavlovas.
We do have a zombie themed song coming up later.
Do
so.
We?
Oh, well, very appropriate.
I'm technically a zombie now. Because I've risen from the dead of my injury.
Well, we do enjoy diversity here at Joy 94.9, so we're very glad to have you, Zombie Patrick.
Yes,
and Rains. Also James. Hello, James.
Hello, guys. Good to have you back, Pat.
It's good to be back, James. Did you miss me?
Yes. I was like, is that a real cast? And you were like, no, don't touch it. It's soft.
It's Don't do it.
So we have a pretty exciting show tonight. We have Scott Watkins, who is going to be talking to us about solar cells. And we also have Callum and Hunter from the Foundation for Young Australians, who are going to tell us all about young people and whether or not we're doomed. Hopefully not.
Pretty much.
So we have a very young team now that we are lacking Jim. So we've got three of us kids in the studio. Very exciting. Running the joint.
You can't claim to be young anymore, Steph. You are now an official adult. Not only that, sorry.
I'm not turning 30 until next month, so yes, I'm going to milk this for all it's worth.
But who is the new
homeowner.
Board member for Joy? Congratulations, Steph. I mean, new
Patrick.
Board member for Joy. And also homeowner.
Homeowner. Or as my friends were saying, homo. Nah. Which, to be honest, I was surprised it took them a good week to come up with that pun.
That is.
They're a bit slow on the uptake.
Let's be honest here. I mean, that just took forever.
See, I should have told you, then you would have been onto it straight away.
Yeah, Patty's quick on those.
Oh, really? I once was in a pun competition and I was failing miserably. They were doing cheese puns. It was just ridiculous.
So we're going to be counting the puns in the show. So we've had one so far and let's see how many we can get to by 11 o'clock. Okay. There's the challenge. Meanwhile,
gay-related puns?
Any puns. Pun is a pun. As long as it's punny, it's good. So if,
that's a pun.
That's number two. If you are listening and you would like to add a pun to our pun collection, you can SMS us on 0427JOY949 or you can email onair@joy.org.au. We would love to hear your puns, love to hear your thoughts. If you are a young person and you want to make... We want to hear what you think about the topics tonight. If you're an old person and you have an opinion on young people, we'd like to hear that too. And you can face our wrath from the zombie. All right. But without further ado, we have Scott Watkins in the studio, who is a former CSIRO scientist and inventor and many other things. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Steph. Hello, everyone.
Welcome to Joy 94.9.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
According to Twitter, Scott is also the king of community radio, so we feel quite honoured to be here in his presence.
I am. I've been working my way through. I did Triple R and 3CR, and I'm really pleased to be here at Joy FM.
Oh, that's so fair. Except you're not on Joy FM, because Joy FM is a Christian radio station from America. Because and if you've never ever... No, I'm not being mean. Everyone says it's Joy FM, but I do think it's really funny when we're on a show like Is Nothing Sacred, where, you know, it's Joy FM. It's just... If Jim was here, because Jim's very anti-religion, like anything that looks religious, he just wants to slap. So it's very amusing.
So branding's important. Okay.
Branding is important. It is. But look, you're on Joy 94.9 with us. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome.
King of community radio.
So, Scott, so your background is in developing solar cells, and I understand that this is an area where technology is still, I guess, being refined. What are some of the developments that have happened recently in solar cell technology?
Well, the solar cells that people have on their roofs at the moment that are out there are mainly based on silicon. And the sort of solar cells that we've been working on are made up of other materials, so mainly carbon-based materials, where we can use them to absorb the light. And that means that we can make these solar cells in different ways, and they have different properties and are potentially cheaper and flexible, lighter, and can be incorporated into the surfaces of all different things. So that opens up a possibility of changing the way that we use solar from these big bulky blue panels that we add onto a roof later to something that we incorporate into sort of the fabric of lots of different parts of our lives.
So when you say different things, is that anything? Like, could I become a solar cell?
So is that technically any carbon?
What about a hat?
Well, hats is an example where people have thought about these sort of things. So the basic structure of these devices are that you've got two electrodes, one's transparent, and in between them you have this absorbing material that's mainly a carbon-based polymer or spore molecule. And the bit in the middle is really, really thin. So it's about 100 times thinner than your hair. So that means that these things look and feel like a chip packet, maybe, and you can laminate that or make that part of all sorts of different surfaces. So you can make them part of a hat. You could make them part of clothing. We look at making them part of a roof rather than something you add on later. You could make them part of a film that's on a window, and even indoor uses, you know, on things like advertising displays and things.
So potentially we could be wearing clothes that have solar panels on them and then walk around and charge our iPhones while we're walking around the city.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really realistic application that people have been talking about. You know, it's you still need to match up the amount of power that you can generate with how much you want, but using simple pieces of our daily life to generate power is a different way of looking at things and something that is definitely feasible with the sort of technology that we've been working on.
How far off is this technology? Is this something that's been demonstrated already, or is it something that, you know, it's sort of like when we talk about medical research, which is something that's going to take, you know, even decades?
Yeah. So the group that I've been leading at CSIRO, they've now, we scaled devices up to about an A3 size, so big as an A3 piece of paper. And that's been work that has gone on in collaboration with some researchers here in Melbourne at Melbourne University and Monash University and the group at CSIRO. And we've been doing this for about 7 years now. So 7 years ago, the answer to that question was, yes, this is far away. Now we're pretty close to this. But the question, I guess, to go into a little bit more depth is, when would we see all these different applications? And some of the applications are closer than others. So something like powering a whole city, yeah, that's still a few years away. But something like that I mentioned before, like an advertising type display where you're making it part of a cardboard stand at your supermarket. You imagine a cardboard stand that's advertising chocolates or chips or something like that. You have a solar cell built into that that's charging up a battery, and then it can flash a light at you to attract your attention. Now, something like that's not going to change the world, and it's arguably not a good thing to do. But from a technology point of view, it's a really easy short-term application to prove to the market that you can make this on a large scale, reproducibility and all that sort of thing, and show that you can actually get a product out there. So the answer is there's products, the technology's ready to go into products like that now. And then the sooner that's taken up, the quicker the next stage of things would happen. And the next stage of things might be things like consumer electronics, where if you imagine a case for a laptop or a tablet or something like that, and that sort of thing, maybe an hour in the sun would give you an hour extra battery life, that sort of thing. And then maybe after that, you think about window films, and then putting it into clothes and tents and stuff like that, and then eventually putting it onto roofs. But the quicker we do those first generation technologies, the sooner we'll get to the powering the cities and the roofs sort of thing.
So you're saying at the current time, the output of this kind of technology wouldn't be enough to, say, power a whole building, but that's what we'd be working towards in the future?
Definitely. And with regard to that, the solar cells that we can make on that sort of A4 to A3 sort of size now, the amount of power they produce is appropriate for those sort of advertising type displays. But on the lab scale, so if you think of solar cells that are about the size of maybe half of your fingernail sort of thing, on those sort of size, we'd made some very, very efficient solar cells. So some of the most efficient in the world, maybe more efficient even than what you get on your roof at the moment. Now, the challenge for the science is to scale up that half fingernail size up to the rooftop sort of size. And that's what we'll keep doing. But we think that by rolling out some of these short-term products that can provide a market and continued incentive for people to fund the research while we go to develop the larger scale work.
So I suppose that's the first step, is making sure that it looks profitable for people who may not have that and their first agenda going, look at how interesting this is. Now what is it going to do for me?
Yeah, because, I mean, most renewable technologies have that issue in that they can take a long time to deliver their energy. So if you look at geothermal power plants, for example, where they've got to dig massive holes in the ground and they consume a lot of money before any product is delivered. And that's where I think we wanted to try and differentiate ourselves by having these short-term products that could actually generate cash flow and are not so much about large-scale power, but more about doing something different and using that to continue to build the momentum for the investment in the large scale.
Also, I suppose it would save money in the long term. If, for example, we go for the advertising board, as an example, having the flashing light, I mean, that saves money on batteries. I know that's not a huge, huge, probably big part of what they're spending, but it is noticeable if you're going over the entire of Australia and you need something, you know, that needs to be powered and then changed every so often.
It was a really fascinating thing for me when we started talking about these applications, because, I mean, the obvious solution to that problem is that they just put another battery in, as you say. And, you know, we talk to supermarkets and they've got a whole aisle of batteries there. Yeah. You know, the battery runs out, they can just replace the battery. But the problem is it's actually no one's job to replace that battery. So those cardboard stands are put there by the advertising agency and the supermarket just wants them to look good and work for the 3 weeks that they're looking there. That's all they want to happen. So it is actually a problem that the batteries run out and the supermarket doesn't want to take responsibility for knowing when to put the batteries in or something like that. So it's a real first world problem here that we're having to provide solar power indoors because no one can go to the shelf and get a battery off it to replace it.
Well, people can, they just don't want to.
Yeah. But so, you know, that side of things doesn't totally sit comfortably with me in terms of being sustainable and good for the planet. But I reconcile it by saying, as I said before, that it's a way to get the technology into the market and that the greater good, the long-term goal sort of justifies that.
So we're going to go to a song, but if you have any questions for Scott, you can SMS on 0427JOY949, phone 1300JOY949, which is 1300 569 949, or email onair@joy.org.au.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with James, Kurt, Steph and Pat on Is Nothing Sacred? Joy 94.9.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. It's 10:15 and we ask chatting with Scott Watkins all about solar cells and renewable energy.
And Hat is fantastic.
And what?
Damn it. I
he's trying to get
stop. Damn it. The pun. We forgot the pun.
The pun.
It's all right.
I'm so sorry.
We can make the recovery. Do you want to repeat it or should we move on?
No, we have to move on.
Quick. Ask a question, James.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, back to Scott. Scott, I was interested in, there was a Facebook post recently talking that was done by the Climate Council. I was talking about the decline in investment in renewable energy, particularly in Australia. How do you think that's going to affect technology such as your own and other important technologies in the renewable energy space? Or is it at all?
Yeah, I mean, no, it's a very relevant question to ask. And there's two aspects to investment. There's investment in projects that are actually, you know, going to deliver power in the short term, so people building large-scale solar arrays, and there's investment in the research. And the former there, the investment in the large-scale solar arrays and wind, and I think there's been a massive drop-off in people investing in that in the last year, mainly because of the uncertainty around the government's approach to things like the renewable energy target. So even without making any changes, just by talking about it, the government has induced big uncertainty in the investment community, and that's had a really big effect, a very negative effect on that. On the research side of things, there has been a little bit more stability. And I think the consortium that I was involved with here in Victoria has had a lot of support from the Victorian state government over quite a long period of time and from the federal government. But some of the things that the current federal government has tried to do, like to do with the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, they attempted to wind that up and stuff like that. That had an effect of discouraging companies putting in research in money to sort of leverage that government investment and do the research. So most of the the decisions that the government have made, the biggest impact, in my view, has been on the uncertainty rather than, you know, actual cuts that they have made. But the outcome of that is the same, in that there's less money and less effort going into this area.
I suppose my own personal observation is that it seems to be ideological, because the more you look at these you know, emerging technologies, is that the massive benefit and economic benefit they could have to the Australian economy and other economies.
Yeah.
So I think Abbott particularly mentioned, it was talking about in the G20 sort of wind-up, about giving power to, you know, billions of the world's poor who have none currently. And something that struck out at me, he was referring to coal as being the only way that it was going to refer to it. But the more we talk about technologies like tonight, Scott, it seems like these technologies would actually be much more perfectly fitted to their situations, off-grid in rural, remote areas.
Yeah.
Would that have an application potentially for them?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I've spent a bit of time in India recently as an example, and, you know, there's huge numbers of people there that don't currently have access to power, and they're not going to be hooked up to grid-powered, coal-fueled electricity. They're going to use distributed energy, and it's going to be solar in a lot of cases. And, you know, so continued investment in the development of solar power is going to have a greater impact on those people than us digging up more coal here in Australia and putting it on a ship to India.
So if we were going to be the devil's advocate, though, you mentioned before about the fact that your aim is to change solar power from a silicon-based model to perhaps a carbon-based model. Is that right?
Well, it's not necessarily about competing. I think, you know, the silicon technology is there. I mean, I have silicon panels on my roof now, and if you asked me what to do today, I would say go and put silicon panels on your roof today. But, you know, solar only provides a small proportion of the world's total electricity at the moment, and silicon will grow and be more. But if we want to accelerate the growth of solar, then I think we have to adopt all sorts of technology. So it won't be a competition between the two in any way. It'll be some applications, you know, silicon solar cells will be great, but if you're talking about a tiny little tent in a urban slum in India, they can't support the weight of a silicon solar panel on their roof. So a lightweight, flexible plastic one is going to be of more use to them.
And price-wise, has carbon got more potential to be a more efficient and cheaper?
Look, there's been massive decline in the price of silicon-based solar panels in the last few years. You know, here in Australia, you can see that now, and to the point where, you know, many people will argue that even without any subsidies, solar is the cheapest form of electricity generation that we can do now. The potential for the printed solar cells to lower that even further is very high. You know, you always have to put the caveat on this that we haven't yet demonstrated on a large scale, but all of the things that the factors that go into the technology, so we use very small amounts of material, we use very low-cost manufacturing processes, so the capital required to set up, we use existing printers, so printers like silkscreen printers like you would do for T-shirts and stuff like that. So companies don't have to make an additional capital investment to set up this manufacturing process. So when you put all those things together, we think that the prospects for printed solar cells to be significantly cheaper are very high, and, you know, that's a really good thing.
It's exciting because often the it can be pessimistic looking at a, you know, adapting or combating climate change and the like. But I suppose things like the cost curve that you were talking about in, you know, renewable energy and solar is something that's very exciting. That it does, the further into the future you look, it just looks like it will become only more and more economic, more and more exciting, more and more efficient.
Yeah, I mean, we here, my house here in Melbourne, we produce more power than we use. We got a plug-in electric car a little while ago, and still we're charging that up at home, and we're still putting more electricity back into the grid than what we're using. And, you know, we're on track, I think, to use something like 2,000 kilometres on a tank of petrol in our car because we're mainly using the electricity in it. So you can do it with the here and now technology, and it's only going to get better.
So when we first introduce you, you describe yourself as a retired scientist. So it sounds like you've got other plans. So what's going to be next on the cards for you?
So I've took the decision, a very amicable one, and to move on from CSIRO recently and to look at a few other opportunities. And some of the things that inspired that decision was, I think, the real growing enthusiasm that I've developed for the opportunities here in Australia in the sort of tech startup and social enterprise space. And I had an opportunity to go over to India recently to do some work with an Australian-based social enterprise, and that was a really great experience. That was a group called Pollinate Energy. And also seeing the work here that's being done in the tech startup space, where people are converting ideas and technologies into products really, really quickly. And so the advent of access to lower cost manufacturing, the move to a lot of things being done online, means that people can take an idea into a business, into a product really, really quickly. And I think my background in developing technology and managing that process, really clearly articulating the benefits and more importantly, what problem is it solving, I'm hoping that I can contribute that expertise to the development of some technologies and startups and social enterprises here. So if you've got a job, you can call in and
Well, yeah, you know, and Abbott's now spruiking the capital from Clean Energy Finance Corporation. So it looks like this might be sticking around. So that'll only help.
So if people want to find out more about the kind of technology we've been talking about tonight, where can they find out about it?
So there's a whole lot of information on the CSIRO website. So on csiro.au/flexible electronics, they probably haven't wiped me off the website yet. There'll still be a few videos of me there talking about printed solar cells. And the other aspect, the solar cells in India that I had been working with is an Australian group called Pollinate Energy, and that's pollinateenergy.org.au. And they're doing some really inspirational work in really translating solar now, here and now, into providing lighting solutions for people living in urban slums in India to replace kerosene lamps, which emit huge amounts of toxic fumes and are the second biggest killer of women and children there in India.
Wow.
And this is, you know, I spent about a month there over the last year, a couple of different trips, and it's a really life-changing application of technology. You sell someone a light and instantly that changes their life, and that's an amazing thing.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Scott.
You are on Is Nothing Sacred here on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're with James, Kurt, Steph and Pat on Is Nothing Sacred? Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. It is 29 minutes to 11. We are talking with Hunter and Callum from the Foundation for Young Australians. Hello.
How you doing?
Hi, guys.
Welcome, welcome. So we're here today to talk about the Unlimited Potential Report, which was launched last week by the Foundation for Young Australians. And I got to say, things are looking a bit grim. So we've got high youth unemployment. We've got young people saying they think they're going to be worse off than their parents. Is there any good news?
Well, there is some good news. First of all, it's probably worth taking in the fact that there is a lot of difficulties for young people these days, and we've identified that in Unlimited Potential. But we found that there's a lot of not-for-profits, a lot of people in the wider space, youth space, that talk around all these problems young people have. We, in fact, work with and know a lot of young people that have a lot of potential and are actually doing quite well. So the research that we've put together alongside with NAB has shown that 80% of young people have the support of their communities and networks to deal with most problems they face. 70% of young people as well are also involved in voluntary or community exercises as well and activities. We've also got quite a diverse population of young people in Australia. So a lot of 40% of young people, their parents are born from overseas. And this represents a huge opportunity for Australia in the Asian century to be able to connect up with business. So there's actually a lot going for young people these days, and it's often framed as it's all doom and gloom, and there definitely is problems. But we've got a different story to tell around the opportunities that we can help prepare young people for.
Is there anything you want to add, Hunter? You're looking quite impressed, feeling happy about the future.
No, I think, very fortunate to work at the Foundation for Young Australians. So we're, just to provide context, Australia's largest independent youth organisation. So we'll work with roughly up to 100,000 young Australians this year, including, our digital reach. And one of our mantras is that we are relentlessly optimistic. And so everything we do, whether it's Indigenous leadership programs in the Northern Territory to incubator programs for young social entrepreneurs to career development and employability skills programs, we operate completely through a positive framework. So that is probably why I had a big smile on my face there, Steph. And we also have the opportunity to work with Australia's future. So, and actually investing into that future as well. So
before we go on to any other questions, if you have a question about young people for Hunter and Callum, you can SMS us on 0427 JOY 949 or email onair@joy.org.au. Patrick, you look like you have a question.
Well, this is something that a lot of people seem to mention about us Gen Ys is the fact that we're quite a fickle bunch. We're quite flighty. Apparently, I've not seen it myself. I'm not flighty at all. but in terms of that, especially with employment, like we're quick. And I suppose also it's the job market at the moment that it's mainly on casual, part-time. It's very unstable in that regard. But it's often pointed out too, well, young people are just choosy and fickle and, it's their fault. But what are we just responding to this different type of environment that occurs in the job market, or is it in fact that we are all fickle and apathetic and just wanting to have the best job straight away laid out on a platter?
I don't think it's because young people are fickle. It is quite a complex job market that young people are entering at this stage. Many of the jobs that young people will be entering into the workplace in the next 10, 20, 30 years don't actually exist today. And as you correctly said, 44% of young people are involved in casual or part-time work, which has gone up from 16% over the last 30 years. So young people are, and this includes myself and a lot of my friends as well, you're picking up lots of different bits of work over time. You're churning through work, as Australian Productivity Commission describes it. So there's a lot of young people moving overseas, or they're travelling, or they're studying, or they're doing bits of part-time work and casual work. Mm-hmm. It's not just being fickle, because there's also the research we've put together also shows that university degrees don't necessarily lead to jobs.
Definitely on that front.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people that are studying degrees and it's not necessarily connected back up to the labour force on the other end. So it is quite complex. And this is where we come in a lot of ways. And I think, Hunter, you can speak about social enterprise, a lot of the work we do there.
Yeah, absolutely, Callum. I think to build on your point of whether we're fickle or not is that young people don't necessarily believe that a degree is a guarantee into full-time work. And what we're seeing now is, as you mentioned, increased casualisation of the workforce. So a lot of people are going back after they finish their first degree and finishing a master's, then doing a degree on top of that, which is ultimately resulting in higher debt for all of us. But what we do know is that young people are more enterprising than ever before. And we've seen that if we can build those capabilities from a young age, so whether it's critical thinking, employability skills, or the concept of pushing entrepreneurship, then ultimately that not only will that increase the job market, but also support our economy too.
So I guess obviously it's hard to know exactly what's going to happen in the future, but you've talked about, I guess, casualisation and education, tertiary qualifications not being a guarantee. What's it going to take, I suppose, for young people to be ready for this new world where there are no guarantees, I suppose?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Steph. So for anyone interested in the report we've published, it's www.fya.org.au/unlimited potential.
And we'll put that also on the Facebook page for anyone who wants to read it.
Fantastic. Thank you, guys. Very polite.
Not polite, we're just clever.
Yeah, exactly. And you're young. And so what we kind of map out what the problem is, what the opportunity is, and what the solution is. And we think there's four areas that we will promise Australia's a successful future for Australia, and that's giving young people enterprising skills, that's pushing active entrepreneurship, engaging with the Asia Pacific region and also backing young people in communities.
So I'm just curious, for us beautiful Gen Ys, well, especially like myself, who has had a degree, now going into a second degree, working part-time, I'm screwed, aren't I, typically, if I'm already in this situation where we've not also got, you know, already these skills already in place where I may not be enterprising. In fact, most likely I'm not. I'm probably very boring.
I wouldn't talk yourself down.
Oh, well, that's what I do best. So
Patrick, we created a radio show. That's pretty enterprising. Yeah.
Technically, I showed up on the first show and then got onto the show.
Well, I read this article that basically said one success factor of young people who do well are having people to back them, you know, particularly, say, people who are high up in a particular sector, someone like Jim who might go, hey, kids, you guys look smart.
And it was like that. So, you know, you're right, I shouldn't.
And I think that applies to, young people in all fields. I guess that's what you guys are saying, that having people of older generations recognising the skills that young people do have and the strengths that they do have.
It's interesting. I was talking to some local government representatives from Victoria the other day and was describing one of the stories of a young person that Hunter and I and Steph have worked with at different points of time. And he's set up his own community group at his school called Multi Pride in the east of Melbourne. And that's around trying to get young people together from different ethnic backgrounds to try to deal with positive ways of dealing with discrimination. He's also set up a badminton club as well for Muslim girls in his school. So there's a lot of and talking to these local government representatives, they're saying, what? Someone's actually doing that by themselves. So they've kind of got this sort of shocked look about them. What FYA tries to do, the Foundation for Young Australians, I should say, is showcase these stories and try to enable other young people to set up their own things in their communities. Because there's many people that are capable of this.
I just love that image of the Muslim girls with badminton. It's just so much beautiful floating fabric. It's going to be so great. Sit there.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're with James, Kurt, Steph and Pat on Is Nothing Sacred? Joy 94.9.
Hey, howdy, hey. This is Nothing Sacred here on Joy 94.9. This is Patrick, Steph and James, and we are speaking with Callum and Hunter from Foundation for Young Australians. It is a fantastic show so far, so if you would like to pop in, ask a question about us young people, you know, young people, how we are, please SMS on 0427 Joy 949 or phone us on 1300 Joy 949 with beautiful Rob out on the desk. Hello, Rob. And also email onair@joy.org.au. If you feel like doing all three, you're a very, very special case. Now,
committed.
You are committed. And I love you very much for being committed, because Q&A just finished. So
we have messages.
We do. We have a message in. This is from Anonymous. Hello, Anonymous. I would read out your number, but that's kind of mean. Anyway, and it says, I'm 25, study full-time and work part-time in nightlife hospitality. Good for you. And I'm so sick to death of older generations telling me that I'm part of that lazy generation. I hear you. I hear you loud and clear, Anonymous. Hear you loud and queer. Anyway.
Pun number three.
God, I'm not doing very well, am I?
We're counting the puns.
Why aren't you guys punning it along?
Because I'm just giving up.
We're not
up
as
already.
Clever as you, Patrick.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Have you seen three? Anyway, but this person then follows up. You want lazy older generations? How about we skim over the retirement village information when the time comes? Funny feeling that we're probably going to be doing that. I'm not looking forward to
it. I don't think our generation will get to go to retirement village.
I don't think I will, but it's okay. You know, because retirement villages are kind of like camp.
Yeah, but by the time we retire, we won't be able to retire until we're in our 80s.
And yeah, then, but saying that, though, in that report, we're supposed to be living much longer, according to that, with our health. And if, unfortunately, though, in my case, because of the amount of stuff that I do, I'm probably going to only live for another 10 years, so it's fine.
It does look quite fun, I have to say. The retirement brochures, you get, you know, children bring you cups of tea and you get to play golf. And
yeah, but then you end up being... the thing about me is that if you're sort of... You're left lonely because then your kids have gone, okay, bye-bye, Dad, and walks away.
You guys are all fine because the male life expectancy is shorter than the female life expectancy.
Fair point.
So you will all still be around with lots of ladies around you and then... Us girls, well, you know, it's fine for me, but...
Yeah, lots of ladies around us. What will that do for us? Am I suddenly going to become straight in night? Oh, my gosh. You know, that board, you know, adulthood has made you heteronormative, my dear.
Yeah. Adulthood has made me heteronormative.
The realisation in your face when you're like, oh, this doesn't even apply to me. Oh, well.
Yeah, but you're going to have a good time, aren't you? It's just, it's going to be like Sapphic Island. It's going to be
Sapphic Island.
But I am...
This is why they give us the 10 o'clock time slot,
Shush.
Everyone.
Shush.
So I'm interested in that statistic, though. Like, how much? Like, what am I expected to live to compared to my parents?
I think we're going to live just as old, but it's just our lives will be a bit crap.
Well, I think one of the major statistics coming out of the report, and what we're trying to do is trying to shift the public discourse away from just talking about the ageing population, and it's definitely going to be a problem for Australia. At the moment, we've got 5 taxpaying citizens for every person over 65. But over the next 30 years, we're only going to have 2.5 taxpaying citizens for every person over 65. So we're going to have to be creative about how we actually, you know, help those people and support people when they go into later ages. And this is where it's really important to think about, you know, building those enterprise skills, finding opportunities, having initiative, and social enterprise is going to be really important as well, all forms of enterprise, to try to build opportunities and jobs where they may not look to exist in the first place.
So, Hunter, I know you're the founder of Kids in Philanthropy. How does that fit in with all this?
I'm very impressed you said philanthropy correctly, Steph. Yeah,
yes.
That was awesome. So Kids in Philanthropy essentially exists to teach young kids entrepreneurial skills and help them set up mini social enterprises, whether it's a lemonade stand or a cupcake store.
So how young is young?
So we work with kids as young as 5 years old. So the demographic's 5 to 15. And so they set up mini businesses, whether it's a lemonade stand or a cupcake store, and donate the money that they raise to kids' charities that they choose. So we've been going about 2.5 years now and have just raised over $280,000 for other kids in need, which is pretty exciting.
That's cashed up there with those.
Well, it's the puppy dog eyes and the please, sir, can I have some more? It just works a treat.
You know, it's really funny, though. I was quite young and I once did one of those sort of cake store things. I think the person who donated most to the cake store was me. In terms of the amount of money I gave, because I was on the stall and I'm like, I'll just 20 cents.
Is that because you keep eating the cakes?
Yes.
At least you were honest.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least you were honest there.
Yeah,
that's
well,
cute.
You know, I was a good kid. I don't know what happened. But anyway, off me, back to awesome kids raising tons of money. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's I guess back to your point, Steph, it's a double-edged sword with youth unemployment, which currently fluctuates around 15%. And social justice being something that's not necessarily taught in school. Kids in philanthropy, these kids are learning entrepreneurial skills and enterprising skills from a young age, but also that social justice arm. And I think young people right now have a really unique opportunity and they no longer have to choose between doing good financially and doing good socially, but can meet in the middle. And we're pretty lucky at Foundation for Young Australians to tick that box ourselves.
Do you have any other advice for young people who might be listening, either of you?
So I work with many, many, many different year 10 students for work experience, and a lot of them do feel this sense of confusion and unsureness around what they're going to do. I guess the best thing to do is just give a shot. You've just got to take up opportunities where you see them. You've got to try to work with the networks that you have at the moment, your friends, your family, your community. And when you see that there's a problem that needs to be dealt with, you find some sort of positive way to have a go at it. And it's amazing what you can do when you start taking up different part-time jobs, voluntary jobs, internships as well, are really important. They're an important way of getting into the workplace.
But make sure you give them boundaries, because I once went up for an internship and they said, so how long has people been here interning? 9 months, unpaid. What? What?
That's definitely a challenge.
What, nameless paper magazine, which I can't say on air? What?
Yeah. So you've got to be careful about that as well. And there's been huge issues, particularly in Europe and the US, with unpaid internships. But you do have to try to take up these opportunities where you get the chance. And if you put yourself out there, you show these sort of skills, you try working with people. Or like for me, for example, I talked to the Year 10 students about playing in a band, and managing a band is being probably one of the most beneficial things I did all throughout school. And sometimes when you're a Year 10, even if you're older, you don't realise you've actually got a lot of those skills and teamwork, communication, organisation, critical thinking and management, that you just don't realise you've got it. So just back yourself in, put out that resume, just keep trying, and then try to see those opportunities where they exist.
What about, older people who are working with young people? Do you have any advice for them?
Yes, Steph. So my background's in facilitation, both at the Foundation for Young Australians and with kids in philanthropy. And I noticed throughout my schooling career that it was often adults or teachers who would get me to rote learn and regurgitate information just to tick off boxes in the curriculum. But what we've found to be really, really effective is kind of three things. And that's the first is empowerment. So actually giving young people a voice and giving them the ability to stand up and execute what it is that they believe in. Experiential learning, I think, is massive. So going through the process of whether it's ideation and prototyping, or whether it's them, going out in community and seeing the impact that they're having around their school projects, I think that's really important. And the ability to be enterprising. So just giving them the tools and the mindset, the employability skills. So whether it's, communication, actually learning how to be passionate about something, I think is really underrated. Teamwork, resilience are all really, really important.
So we do have to wrap up very shortly. If people want to find out more information, they can go to www.fya.org.au/unlimitedpotential. Is there anywhere else that people should be looking to change the world?
You can definitely check out kidsinphilanthropy.org.au. But there's...
Smooth.
Yeah. but no, absolutely. Definitely check out the Foundation for Young Australians website. We have so many initiatives that are there to back our young people, and they're all really engaging. We've got a great website, so definitely check it out.
Excellent. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to briefly go to some messages. It is 5 minutes to 11. You are on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au. You're with James, Kurt, Steph and Pat on Is Nothing Sacred? Joy 94.9.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. It's 4 minutes to 11, so we're going to have to go soon. But firstly, we have another text. Would you like to read it out, Patrick?
So Anonymous turns out to be someone who is a very dear friend of mine, very close to my heart. Beautiful Dylan from Countercultured on Saturdays. Oh, crap, I've forgotten the time. What is it?
On Joy 94.9.
On Joy 94.9. There should be a thing here. It should tell me when it is, but he'll run in later. Anyway, check it out. But he also says, I hear some of those retirement villages have like special baths or something. You know, this sounds a little bit like what I'm going to do, before I hit retirement. I'm going to have a menagerie, emphasis on the word men. And it is going to be one of every flavour. It is going to be so exciting. One that matches the outfit.
So we're all looking forward to retirement, it seems.
Well, I'm not really going to retire. I'm just going to age disgracefully until I finally kick the bucket.
Excellent. Well, we do have to finish up, sadly, but I'd like to say thank you so much to Scott for talking to us earlier in the show, and thank you to Hunter and Callum for chatting to us about young people. Thank you very much for Patrick for keeping it sufficiently dirty. Yeah. Tonight, thank you.
I really did, didn't I, this time? I think it's my zombie nature.
Your zombie nature.
And thanks to all the guests. We just wanted to reiterate that jump onto the Is Nothing Sacred Facebook page, because we will put up the relevant links for tonight, which are very important.
That's Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9, if you put that into Facebook.
Yes, or facebook.com/Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
That's the one.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.